All the new snow across our listening area has made for dicey driving conditions. Good evening, I'm Connor Valentine.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry tells us about the latest development in the effort to protect the Flathead's North Fork. And in tonight's feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with U.S. Senator Max Baucus about the impending end of his career in Congress and his new venture. While our latest wave of snow has Montana's powder hounds rejoicing, drivers across our listening area have been dealing with treacherous road conditions. Temperatures hovered around freezing in the early evening last night, keeping some roads wet, but froze overnight as colder temperatures moved in with additional snow. Currently, most roads across our listening area are snow-packed and icy. Montana Department of Transportation's Brandy Hamilton says roads that are already slick will almost certainly get worse as the night goes on and temperatures drop.
So most, it is pretty icy. I have gotten the latest weather warnings are calling for heavy snow through the evening, another couple of inches of accumulation. So with things being slick right now anyway, travelers should really be cautious. Keep in mind, you know, leave plows plenty of room to work, turn your lights on, keep your cruise control off, just all the typical safety measures that we would encourage travelers to be aware of.
Montana Highway Patrol Major Shane Grimes says he has seen many crashes today across the western half of the state, mostly slide-offs. Grimes says drivers need to pay much closer attention to road conditions, especially because they can change in a short period of time.
You know, a lot of the times when we see these storms passing through, you could be on some stretches of the road that are bare and dry or wet, and then unexpectedly they encounter more icy snowpack conditions, which definitely can cause problems for drivers that are not paying attention. The biggest thing really is to pay attention to the road conditions and just be aware that whenever we're hovering around that freezing temperature mark, that the road conditions can definitely change real quick, and also to drive accordingly by reducing their speed.
For updated information on Montana's road conditions, you can visit the Department of Transportation's website, mdt511.com, or download their mobile app. Just search for MDT Travel Info. We'll have more on weather later on in this broadcast.
And in other news from around the state, U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell says the government has finalized agreements with the leaders of two Montana Indian reservations as part of a Native American land buyback program. Today's announcement involved the Northern Cheyenne Tribe and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes from the Flathead Indian Reservation. The agreements will provide resources for outreach and education about the buyback initiative. The 10-year, $1.9 billion program emerged from a lawsuit settlement approved in 2012 over the government's long history of mismanaging Indian Trust royalties. It aims to consolidate land held by numerous fractional owners and transfer the property to tribes to benefit their numbers. Confederated Salish and Kootenai Chairman Ronald Trahan says tribal leaders plan to purchase more than 38,000 acres of trust land and consolidate it for more productive use.
A major element for protection of the North Fork Flathead River Valley moves forward this week. Representative Steve Daines announced a bill that retires many oil and gas leases in the area unanimously passed the House Natural Resources Committee. The Senate version has already made a similar step, and Katrin Fry reports this is the latest in a 30-plus year effort that may be nearing completion.
The North Fork of the Flathead River runs down from Canada along the western border of Glacier National Park and combines with the other two forks of the Flathead River to flow into Flathead Lake. The area north and south of the border has been eyed for natural resource development for the coal deposits found there. Glacier Program Manager Michael Jamieson with the National Parks Conservation Association says with Representative Steve Daines' bill moving out of the House Natural Resources Committee, the issue is ready to go before the full Congress.
What Congressman Daines achieved in moving the bill unanimously through committee on Tuesday is he set the stage for us to be able to have a formal conversation about the bill's future.
The North Fork Watershed Protection Act of 2013 would restrict new mineral development in the North Fork of the Flathead.
This bill actually protects resource extraction in the sense that it ensures a future for what has been a century of timber harvest in the area, and it makes sure that the mills that rely on that timber will be sustainable into the future. Because it's awfully hard to run a logging operation on top of a strip mine.
This House bill mirrors one introduced by Senators John Tester and Max Baucus. Jameson says the issue was taken up by Senator Baucus when he was first in office in the late 1970s. He says several proposals emerged for mountaintop removal coal mines in the Canadian Flathead at the time.
And so for 30 years, there was a fairly robust transboundary water dispute going on between Canada and the U.S., between British Columbia and Montana, around what the downstream impacts from those mines might be.
In 2010, Canada committed to withdraw the British Columbian Flathead from future mining and drilling in an area that is headwaters of the North Fork of the Flathead River in Montana. Jameson says part of that cross-border agreement is that Montana would follow suit.
This was a transboundary effort to protect the watershed upriver of Flathead Lake. And so this bill is part of the response to the Canadians' goodwill gesture. We've owed them this for a few years now.
Jameson says this legislation is one piece of protecting the North Fork. He says other pieces include the Wild and Scenic River designation that the North Fork has, and other protection comes through the ongoing Flathead National Forest planning process.
And part of it, frankly, depends on the Canadians on their side of the border in terms of making sure that timber harvest, wildlife connectivity, mining in adjacent drainages and so forth don't impact the North Fork. This is a tremendously important piece of a very complicated puzzle that we are getting very close to having snapped together.
Jameson says this move makes him optimistic about conservation in the state as a whole.
I don't think we have to be pro-mining or anti-mining or pro-logging or anti-logging. I think we're past that, and I think we're on to a somewhat more sophisticated, nuanced conversation where we're talking about to what extent shall we industrialize the landscape to capitalize on very important resources? Where should we do that? When should we do that? And in what areas should we back off?
With the Senate and now the House poised to take action on the North Fork Watershed Protection Act, a decision will likely get made before Senator Baucus leaves office. Catherine Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Former Secretary of State Brad Johnson has announced his candidacy for the State Public Service Commission. Lee Newspapers of Montana reports the East Helena Republican is seeking the seat representing Western Montana that is currently held by PSC Chairman Bill Gallagher. Gallagher is not re-seeking election after being diagnosed with cancer. The five-member PSC regulates utility companies in the state. Johnson says the job of commissioner is to, quote, strike a careful balance between protecting the interests of Montana ratepayers and maintaining the visibility of Montana's utility providers, end quote. Republican Representative Derek Skies of Whitefish and Democratic Representative Galen Hollenbaugh of Allena are also candidates. Johnson served as Secretary of State from 2005 to 2008. He ran for the District 5 PSC seat 4 years ago, narrowly losing to Gallagher in the primary.
Data provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation shows most children in the United States, including Montana, are not proficiently reading by the fourth grade. And the director of Montana Kids Count, Tala Dillon of the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research, says this deficiency could have significant impacts both on their individual lives and the nation as a whole. The Early Reading Proficiency in the United States report finds 65% of Montana children are not reading proficiently upon entering the fourth grade. Research shows fourth grade is a turning point in a child's education. Dillon says the National Assessment of Educational Progress is designed to determine how well children comprehend what they're reading and whether they're properly interpreting contextual clues. She says Montana's low reading scores are startling, but right on par with the national average.
I think it's related to the issue of early childhood education that we have seen a lot in the news media lately, both from Governor Bullock and from President Obama, because early education creates this foundation, the support for social-emotional development and exposure to language. It creates the foundation to make children ready to start learning once they enter school, and then using that foundation as a springboard to continue the quality of learning that they have already started.
The report finds reading proficiency gaps along economic and racial divides.
Looking at all Montana fourth graders, 65% read below proficiency levels. But if you look at low-income children, 78% read below proficiency. The racial differences are also there, especially between white students and American Indian students, and white students and Hispanic students, and white students and black students.
The report states that should the current trend of low reading proficiency scores continue, by 2020, the majority of new American workers may be underprepared to enter a competitive workforce. Dylan says Americans need to do more to support early education programs as well as individual parents and caregivers to improve those reading skills.
A governor's council recommends restricting new development in sage-grouse habitat in Montana to avoid federal protections that would lead to tighter rules. Lee Newspapers of Montana reports the Greater Sage-Grouse Advisory Council is recommending a no-surface occupancy zone within 1 mile of active sage-grouse breeding grounds and a quarter-mile buffer zone in less critical habitat. The group also recommended the state help fund conservation efforts. Councilmember Glenn Marks of Helena says the state must show it's taking the proper steps so the federal government doesn't step in. Governor Steve Bullock says the group's recommendations will be included in a sage-grouse protection proposal the state plans to submit to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which must decide by 2015 whether the ground-dwelling bird should be listed as endangered.
A state judge has denied a bail reduction for a former correctional facility nurse charged with trying to intimidate a witness after she was charged with having sex with three inmates. The Montana Standard reports District Judge Ray Dayton heard testimony yesterday on 45-year-old Tisha Ann Brunel's request for a reduction in her $100,000 bail. The Anaconda woman was charged last year with four counts of sexual intercourse without consent, along with transferring illegal articles to inmates at the state's Sanction, Treatment, Assessment, Revocation, and Transition, or START program, northeast of Anaconda. Brunel was free on a $25,000 bond when investigators found evidence she was trying to tamper with witnesses. She was charged and her bail increased. Brunel's trial is scheduled to start in March.
Montana Senator Max Baucus is having a nostalgic week. Baucus is expected to be soon confirmed by the Senate as the new ambassador to China. This week, he has had a confirmation hearing before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, a weekly morning coffee reception for visiting Montanans, probably his last, and a lot of interviews about the impending end of his near 40-year career in Congress. News Director Sally Mock sat down with the senator in his D.C. office to discuss his new venture and his public service legacy.
Senator, you told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this week that you first became interested in China and in public service when you were a college student hitchhiking around the world, that you had an epiphany on that trip, that public service was something you wanted to do. Tell me a little bit more about that epiphany.
I put a knapsack on my back, got a little handbag, and stuck my thumb out and started hitchhiking around the world for a year. I started out in France and around Europe and Africa and Asia and so forth. When I was then Belgian Congo, it just hit me. It was an epiphany. It just hit me that the world's getting smaller, natural resources are diminishing. Somehow we got to get along better in this world together if we're going to resolve our differences and work things out. And maybe if I had something to do with all that, at least my life might be a little better. Maybe somebody else's life might be a little bit better. Then went to work after law school for a few years. And at that time, I was working in D.C. I thought, well, I think I'll go over to watch the Senate proceedings a little bit. And then I thought, well, I'll go talk to Mike Mansfield, because my family's always spoke well of Mike. We talked a bit, saw him a couple of three times, and asked, what does he think about my getting the public service? By this time, I was thinking, yeah, this is something I think I might want to do. He strongly urged me to try my hand at public service, gave me some advice, you know, what to do, where to go, who to see, and so forth. So I thought that made sense, and they had it all together, and I decided, yep, that's what I want to do. And really, that trip around the world, and all the experiences I had, all the countries I visited, seeing some common themes throughout in all the countries, realizing that no country has a monopoly, really, on culture, virtue, or religion. We're all in this world together. We got to work together. And I wanted to just pursue an objective, one of my calling to be something where I'm helping solve people's problems and working things out, because I felt that was the right thing to do. I feel extremely lucky that I had that opportunity to take that trip. And I shudder to think what would have happened had I not. I am sitting here at this moment in this place because of that trip. That framed me. That is the most determinative year of my life. It set the course for so much that followed. And I'm so glad, so lucky, as able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Senator, both you and I think Senator Mansfield, who I didn't know personally, I heard him speak a few times, but I think you both are what people would describe as introverts in an extrovert occupation. Most politicians love the glad handing and the limelight that comes with it, but that's not your favorite part of the job, is it?
No, there's something to that, frankly. The part I like is interacting with a person and his or her issue or problem, trying to help solve it. The part that's more notorious or glamorous or public is a part that means much less to me. An example is the Affordable Care Act, when that passed. And man, oh man, there are a lot of people who are not too wild about that statute. I love sitting down with groups of people, say Montana small business people, did it many times, maybe 20, 25, 30, 40 people for a couple hours, stand up and explain what's going on, take all questions, answer all questions honestly, candidly, forthrightly, and because that's my goal, is to help understand the act is and to take back some concerns that people have. Just again, the main point is let's figure this out.
The Affordable Care Act will be one of the signature pieces of legislation, right? You'll be remembered for. It will be part of your legacy, right? For good or ill.
Correct. Right. It will.
History will judge it in a certain way. You've been as critical as many others about some aspects of the act and certainly the rollout of it. What do you see 10 years from now people are going to be saying about that legislation? What do you hope and what do you expect?
Yeah, that's a good question. I believe strongly in the act. I worked very hard for its passage. I spent close to 3 years on the Affordable Care Act, a couple of years in preparation. November 2008, we put together my office's white paper on health care. It was really the foundation from which all legislative efforts here were built on. We had to pass that legislation. Conditions in America would be much worse today had that act not passed. Health care costs would be rising at a much faster rate had we not passed it. The insurance industry would not be reformed had we not passed that statute. People with pre-existing conditions would not get coverage had we not passed that act. There are a whole host of reasons why it was necessary in America. We're the only country not to have a health care system that be passed. It is not perfect. It needs to be improved upon, no question. Any major effort like that, by definition, will have to be improved in the next couple, 3 years. My criticism was based more on the implementation, that is, before the exchanges were set up. I could tell by asking a lot of administration officials that they were not doing what they should have been doing. They hadn't kept their eye on the ball here. And when the exchange date rollout came along, they were not going to be ready. I knew that. I could tell that. And I many, many times privately said, you got to be doing this. You got to be doing that. And they weren't doing anything. And so finally, publicly, just out of exasperation, I just said, yeah, hey, we got to fix this. What will happen 10 years from now? Who knows? But it could well be, it'll be somewhat similar to Medicare and Social Security. Two statutes that were very strongly opposed at first. And then after we became accustomed to the two statutes, both Social Security and Medicare, and we improved upon them and built upon them, this made them better, that now they're basically accepted as a necessary, almost necessary part of our life. I'm reminded, and I was a member of the House, me innocently, sophomorically, I said to Mike Mansfield, says, you know, Mike, if you do what's right, the people will eventually reward you. And he looked at me, a little twinkle in his eye, a little grin. He says, yup, but sometimes it takes a long time. and this might be that.
Senator, over the years, progressives have sometimes felt betrayed by you. Conservatives have attacked you as being too liberal. Reporters have labeled you as a moderate or as someone who shifts with the political winds. Any of them right?
My goal is to do what I think is right. I'm not going to get too concerned about labels I really don't. Right, left, up, down, you know. I just try to do the best I can with what I've got. That's all one can do in life, is do the best you can with what you've got. I love our state. I'm so privileged to be representing Montana. This is a problem. I often say, with apologies to Texans, we in Montana are more proud of Montana than Texans are of Texas. We're just not so loud about it. And I think that summarizes us as Montanans. I feel very, very lucky. That's part of my blood and my background. So I just work with my base. My base is Montana. I remember the ranch and working state, the work days I have at home, just being with people and hiking, fishing, just that's me. And just keep that foundation, just keep rooted in Montana in a very basic way like that, then just do the best you can.
Mm-hmm. Just a few months ago that you were standing in front of the family home in Helena, mm-hmm. and talking about how you were so anticipating coming home to Montana and enjoying all those right. things, and now here you are headed off to yeah. Beijing. Tough decision it must have been.
Well, it was. Sometime ago I decided I was not going to run again. That was probably the most difficult professional decision in my life, not to run again for the United States Senate. I don't presumptuously say that that Montanans would have reelected me, but it was a tough decision not to run again. And then a few weeks, Mel and I, we're coming home. We're going to build a house and be able to go hike and enjoy the outdoors and skiing and so forth. But knew I'd wanted to work, do something. I wasn't sure what it was going to be. But I just wanted a whole new chapter in my life, something that would be as adventurous, as exciting, as engaging as my work representing our state in the Senate. Then lo and behold, this opportunity came along. I learned that the China ambassador is coming back. I've had an interest in China for many, many years. And Vice President Biden suggested the opportunity to me, and I thought, well, gee, yeah, that'd be exciting. That's new. It means I can't go home and go hiking as much as Mel and I like to, but that's a new adventure. Let's go for it.
In 2003, Senator, you supported the war in Iraq. And in 2006, your beloved nephew, Philip, was killed in that war. And not long after that, you said the war was a mistake. There's an old canard that if everyone in Congress had a close family member in the military that could be sent to war, that maybe they'd be less likely to vote for the war.
It was a mistake. I'll never forget. My brother called me about Philip. That was really tough.
These last few days must be tough to be letting go of your long career here in Congress and in the Senate. It must be just one nostalgic moment after another.
It is tough. It's a huge change. You're moving away from the rhythms of the job, from the people you see, from the work that you do, from the issues that you're working on, not knowing what's next. A lot of it is conscious, but a lot of it is subconscious. I could just feel it. I remembered something that Mike Mansfield said. So when you serve to the hilt. You serve thoroughly. You just go for it. But when you leave totally. You just put it behind you and let others take up the baton. Others do the work. That's their job. It's not yours anymore. And your job is to go off and do what else you're going to do, something new and different. And so I'm going through that right now. And this new job, I guess I'm going to have, knock on wood, don't have it yet, will be so fascinating, so challenging, and it's similar to represent Montana in the sense that you're just representing people and so forth. But I'm going to miss home. I will want to come home frequently, but I don't know if this job is going to allow it very frequently. But heck, life is choices. you got to make a choice. And this is the choice that Mel and I are making. We love doing it, knowing there's light at the end of the rainbow. That means afterwards, knock on wood, coming back home.
Senator, thank you so much for the interview and best of luck in your new job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, there's a winter storm warning in effect until 11 o'clock tonight for the West Glacier region, the Lower Clark Fork region, the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains, and the Butte and Blackfoot region. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow, and lows should be in the teens. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow and highs in the 20s. In central Montana tonight, there's a chance of snow through the night and expect lows 5 below to 5 degrees above zero. Tomorrow, there's still a chance of snow with highs in the 20s. In southwest Montana tonight, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and lows 5 to 15 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow through the day with highs in the 20s. And now for the editorial comments of Stephanie Potts.
Safety regulations are some of the most important laws we have to protect public health, but they can also be some of the most confusing aspects of running a successful local food business. For a long time now, many of Montana's local food producers and consumers have been dealing with a frustrating patchwork of food safety regulations. As a local food policy specialist with the National Center for Appropriate Technology and coordinator for the Grow Montana Food Policy Coalition, I've heard from folks across the state that are contending with the current food regulations. I've talked to businesses selling at farmers markets who must navigate different levels of regulations and enforcement in each county they visit, and value-added producers who want to comply with all the rules but have no idea how to find out exactly what those regulations are. I've spoken with conscious consumers who want a legal way to purchase fresh foods like eggs, canned goods, and poultry raised on small local farms. And I've also heard from county sanitarians who are trying to protect public health and help local businesses, but have very limited resources to do so. But now, for the first time, those who are impacted by Montana's food regulations can have a say through an innovative government initiative, the Montana Food Safety Modernization Project. I'm happy to have this opportunity to tell you more about the process and how you can get involved. Many of our modern food safety laws were written in response to how most food is produced in America, through a long industrialized food chain. But as the local food movement has grown, producers and consumers have noticed that current rules and regulations don't always reflect the realities of a smaller scale, more transparent local food system. They can cause burden and confusion for small producers, limiting their success. In Montana, our producers also face an additional challenge because jurisdiction for food safety regulations is split between three state agencies, as well as a network of county sanitarians who are given relative independence compared to a lot of other states. During the 2013 legislative session, problems related to these regulations led to a number of bills dealing with food safety. There were a lot of debates that seemed to generate more questions than answers. But one thing that everyone could agree on was that the current system had problems, and that the agencies in charge of food safety regulations need to do more to communicate with each other and the public. Representative Kathleen Williams of Bozeman found a solution when she crafted HB 630, a bill creating the Montana Food Policy Modernization Project. The bill directed the Departments of Agriculture, Livestock, and Health and Human Services to work together to evaluate all of the current food laws for inefficiencies and inconsistencies. One of the goals of the project is to increase opportunities for local food businesses, so the departments are also specifically asked to look into how home kitchens can be safely used to prepare certain foods and how many commercial kitchens are available across the state. Public input is the bedrock of the Montana Food Policy Modernization Project. The departments are holding three public meetings and also accepting written comments until February 7th. Public comments will lead to changes in how the departments that regulate food work with one another. They will also be included in a report that will be delivered to the Interim Economic Affairs Subcommittee of the Legislature this spring. This subcommittee can choose to turn the report's recommendations into a bill for the 2015 legislature, which would lead to more statutory improvements. During the public meetings that took place over the past month, many topics were discussed, from small-scale poultry processing to the need for streamlined enforcement across counties. Ideas for a cottage food law, which would allow small food businesses to start out of a home kitchen and then scale up once they're more established, were also a hot topic. Overall, one of the themes most reiterated throughout the process has been the need to make the regulations easier to understand and comply with across all counties. Montana's local producers want to do what is legal and right to protect the public's health, but in order to do so, they need a clear and fair path to follow. NCAT's Grow Montana Food Policy Coalition works to support Montana's food and agricultural economy through common sense solutions. One of the most common sense things we can do to support local food in Montana right now is fix the tangled web of food regulations that local producers must navigate in order to bring their products to market. Doing so would keep more money in our communities and increase the availability of healthy, local food for all Montanans. The Montana Food Policy Modernization Project represents an unprecedented opportunity for everyone, producer or consumer, to have a say regarding how food is regulated in the state. If you have something to add to this conversation, I hope you'll submit a written comment. The more detailed, the better. Comments are being accepted through February 7th and can be emailed to cojensen@mt.gov. That's cojensen@mt.gov. For more information, you can visit Grow Montana's website at www.growmontana.ncat.org. In Missoula with the National Center for Appropriate Technology, I'm Stephanie Potts for the Alternative Energy Resources Organization. Arrow has been linking people with sustainable agriculture and energy solutions since 1974. Visit Arrow online at arrowmt.org.
Stephanie Potts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Valentine. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.